More information at finnandmcdonald.com or 208-263-3622.
Good morning on a beautiful April 9th. You are tuned into 88.5 KRFY for the Thursday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. And it is a very lovely day outside. Spring has finally arrived after a very late winter resurgence. And you've got Jim and Jack up here in the studio today. Our guests are Team Laughing Dog. That's Arlene Cook, Kirk Johnson, Dave Sturgis, and in the background, Mel Dick, maybe chiming in. And, well, good morning to you, Jim.
Good morning, Jack. I'm sort of wearing black. My Lady Irish lost to University of Connecticut on Tuesday night, and I'm not very happy. Then I found out that the lead player, she's going to go in early to the WNBA, so.
Oh, my.
I'm not happy. So
no.
There goes my dreams of next year. But enough about basketball. I'm putting it behind me. What does the weather look like? Yesterday was a lie. Yesterday, I read that in the afternoon there was going to be thunderstorm and rain all over the place. And it was gorgeous.
It was, yeah.
So you better have a little caveat in there with when you read the weather.
It does have, we have a little a chance of showers today. Isolated showers, 20% later on. Couldn't judge it by looking out our skylight right now. It's beautiful blue skies, not a cloud to be seen. High of 58 today. Tomorrow, more of the same, partly sunny with a high of 59. And then get a little cooler during the weekend down to about 50. But 50's not bad. I mean, I'm not going to complain about that.
Depends which way you're looking at it, where you're coming from.
Yeah, that's true. It's nice for North Idaho, though. The Final Four is over. The whole March Madness is over, and I missed it. I was gone these last 2 weeks.
Well, look forward to baseball season. That'll keep you busy at least through the boys of October.
Yeah.
We are crowded here in the studio this morning. We have lots of bodies around the mics. As Jack said earlier, we have Dave Sturgis, Arlene Cook, Kirk Johnson, and Mel Dick. And they are all members of Team Laughing Dog, and they are going to participate in the Race Across America to raise funds and awareness for cystinosis. And let's begin with Dave. Could you give a little bit of background to Team Laughing Dog and your involvement with this organization?
Well, my involvement started probably back in 2009. At that time, 24 Hours for Hank Foundation was born, and it was to provide funds for research for cystinosis because it is classified as an orphan disease. And at that time, we had a 24-hour bike ride. And that was about the same time that Team Laughing Dog was born through the direction of Mel Dick. And so they participated in that. And they were big supporters of 24 Hours for Hank. And then that kind of led to the first-year race when they went across America in 2011. And they needed some support people. And I thought, you know, they've done a lot for 24 Hours for Hank. I should be able to return some of that that help. And so that's how I became part of that team. And then as a support person. And then last year I was asked to again participate. And that's when I was sitting next to Mel as we journeyed across the country. And Mel's point was, you know, Dave, he said, I really want to help you find a cure for your grandson, Henry. And I think we can do that through Team Laughing Dog, but it's going to require you to ride. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to be 70 years old, and that's probably the last thing I'd want to do. But Mel was persistent, and it all made sense, because at a young age, when Henry was diagnosed, it was my promise to him that I would help him make that disease go away. And here was an opportunity for me to do that, and physically I felt I could do it, and so that's how I became involved at this point, Jim.
Could you talk a little bit more about cystinosis? That's something that I've, first time I've heard it.
Yeah.
If you could give a little context.
Sure. You know, when Henry was diagnosed, cystinosis, as I mentioned, is an orphan disease, and there's less than 500 children in the United States, 2,000 worldwide. And so when you hear that kind of news, you think, geez, you know, how am I going to figure this out? I couldn't even spell the word cystinosis, let alone Google it. But thank goodness for the internet, and we started to learn about it. It's a rare metabolic disease that is genetically produced. It requires both parents to have the gene, 1 in 250,000 chance that would happen.
Wow.
And then there's also a 1 in 4 chance that your child would be born with it. But basically what happens, we all have a byproduct in our body called cystine. And most of us, or all of us here, will spin that off. Henry's retains it. And in doing so, it develops crystals, and it will affect every major organ in the body. And there isn't currently a cure, but there is medicine that slows the process down.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, Henry's taken about 40 tablets a day.
Wow.
And which is completely down from what he originally started out because of the research that's been done and the fundraising that's been provided by this community to 24 Hours for Hank. He's now on a time release, which he only takes every 12 hours instead of every 6. And a big milestone for him this year, he's turned 8, but all of these drugs were going through a G-tube. And here, 2 Saturdays ago, the G-tube was removed, and he's now taking it orally. So,
and that's a step.
It's a big step.
Big step.
And usually, you know, by the age of 10, they require a kidney. And the crystals also kind of go into the eyes. Like you say, it affects every major organ. A good example of that would be, just think that we have little glass crystals in our system, and they're floating around and deteriorating the major organs. So another thing that's just happened recently, and Henry will be going into a clinical trial study here this month, or at least be qualified for it, and that is during his wake time hours, he's supposed to be putting eye drops in every hour. And they've designed a little contact wafer that he'll be able to put in his eye, and that can last up to 10 days. So again, to minimize that crystal buildup. So that's kind of it in a quick nutshell, I guess,
wow.
Jim.
Wow. I'm going to turn to Arlene. Arlene, how did you become involved with Dave's raising awareness and funds for cystinosis?
Well, this year, actually, it has a lot to do with Kirk, because Kirk has been part of the team since the beginning, and crew chief the last 4 years. And Kirk's finally got a chance to be a rider. And I told Kirk, if you get a chance to ride, I will do whatever you need to do to support your crew. So I was going to be on the crew. And then one of the gals that was going to ride wasn't able to. I was the first alternate, and now I'm riding. So that's how I became a rider. But when I first heard about Hank, I know some people that have worked with Hank since he was a kid and helped him out with his disease. And I'm pretty passionate about trying to help him out. He's a really great little kid.
Now, how many people will be actually pedaling?
There's just 4 of us, and it's a relay. So we pedal 24/7 until we get there.
Okay, and Kirk, could you tell us about the route? You know, where does it start, the date, and where the key places along the way?
Sure, Jim. So the route is it's 3,000 miles. Starts in Oceanside, California, and goes to Annapolis, Maryland. Covers 11 states. I think there's over 170,000 feet of climbing. Yeah, and just depending on what the weather gives you, it can be very hot, very cold, very windy. So it's I think that's part of the fun of the race is it changes every year, even though it's on the same route.
How long is this going to take?
Well, there's teams have 9 days that they are able to that they have to be able to do it in. We're planning on being able to do it in under 7. That would average make us an average of 18 miles an hour
across the country in 9 days on bicycle.
Yep, and we're hoping to do it in less than 7. So
wow. I thought it was going to be like a month or something. I didn't.
I'm sure there's days where we wish we could go a little slower. But
who decided on the route?
You know, the route's been the same at least for the last 11 years. The race itself has been going on. This is the 34th year for the race. And it's really only changed. I think the first year they ever did it, it started in San Diego and it went to New Jersey. But it's always been roughly 3,000 miles.
We had a woman on the program about 2 weeks ago pedaling across America for MS. And she's going east to west, Maine to Seattle. So I'm sure that there might be a place where you can. Is there advantage to going west to east as opposed to east to west? You know, the logistics of it just I find fascinating. Mel said he wasn't going to speak, and now Mel is going to.
Well, this is Mel. That was a great question. I've had the opportunity to do this ride, and the advantage if you go west to east is the prevailing winds are generally west to east.
Yeah. Okay.
However, in 2013, we had a headwind across the country.
No.
And 2011, we had a tailwind across the country. So it really varies. One thing to add to the route, to put that 170,000 feet of climbing into perspective, that would be like riding your bike up Schweitzer Mountain to the top about 70 plus times.
Oh, good Lord. Wow. Now, explain the logistics of the race. Who would like to talk about? You said it's not four people all pedaling at one time, but I think Kirk is going to be the one to field this one. What's the give me a typical day with Team Laughing Dog pedaling?
Sure, Jim. So we start off, and the crew itself is kind of divided into three parts. There's an RV crew, four people that just get the RV down the road, and then there's a crew for each two riders out there as well. So. There's two vans. There's a rider van that progresses the rider that's not riding forward to the exchange point. And then there's a follow van. Certain times of the race, you're required to be directly behind your rider. And so for that six-hour period, the riders decide whether they want, you know, half-an-hour pulls, 15-minute pulls. Depends on the terrain a lot of times and the weather. From there, you leapfrog each other for 6 hours until you hit the RV. The next crew comes out, and the whole thing starts back over again.
We're here on 88.5 KRFY with members from Team Laughing Dog raising funds and awareness about cystinosis. Dave Sturgis, Arlene Cook, Kirk Johnson, and Mel Dick. And they're going to begin pedaling on June 20th. And 7 days, how many miles per day is that? Oops, silence. The looks. You should see
now
the looks.
Do some
Too
math.
Bad radio is not a visual medium. Okay, we're going to swing the microphone around to Dave.
Well, based on our finish time of less than 7 days, and we're doing that because Team Laughing Dog, the 2011 team, actually set the record. And, of course, we want to be able to have the bragging rights when we get back. It's all about being a champion, right? So, anyway, my math says that during my six-hour pull, I need to do 120 miles. So that works out to about 20 miles an hour. And so I kind of made that the benchmark for our team.
Okay,
it's probably a little high, but you know, you gotta reach for the stars here. So that's kind of what we're looking at is would be 60 miles, then I'd be off, and then I'd be back in for another 60. And so my goal is to do the 120 in the in my 24-hour period.
I'm sure that what Kirk said, you know, with the terrain would make a difference if you're pedaling across the great Midwest that has a tendency to be somewhat flat as opposed to heading into the Rockies or something. You know, mileage will change. And also what Mel said about the prevailing tailwind. that if the gusts are there. Let's talk about raising funds. How does one support the 24 Hours for Hank? Is there a website? What would you like the listeners to hear?
Yeah, this is Dave, and the easiest way certainly is to go to 24hoursforhank.org. And in there, on that webpage, when it comes up, there'll be a picture of Henry with his parents. And there's a drop down called Events, and you can certainly go there, or you can scroll down just a little bit, and you'll find a picture of a bicyclist and a mountain, and says 24 Hours for Hank. It's kind of our logo. If you click on that, that'll take you directly to a fundraising page where you'll see Henry and myself and a brief description of what mm-hmm. we're doing and how you can donate. Certainly, at that same juncture, there's a address with a post office box that you can actually mail a check to, and certainly we'll accept it either way. So those are the two possible ways and probably the easiest.
Do you have a goal, a financial goal that you would like to arrive at?
Well, you know, we've always had the 24-hour ski event, and old Father Winter didn't cooperate with us too well this year, so we had postpone that.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, so we postponed the ski event, and fortunately, we had the Race Across America scheduled, and so at that point, we've kind of rolled everything over into that. Our goal is $120,000. And we think that's realistic, and certainly we'll be moving in that direction.
I'm not going to ask you how much per mile. I've got a map here that if one goes to the website, one gets a map of your route. And that is quite impressive. You're going now, I'm going to ask Kirk this. What kind of roads do you pedal on? I mean, we're not going to go down the interstate and see a bunch of people along the side, you know, and that sort of thing. I hope not.
Yeah, correct. It's mostly back roads. They intentionally try to keep you off interstates. A lot of two-lane roads, a lot of roads with minimal shoulders. It seems like the shoulders get smaller and smaller the further you go east. It's mostly small town America. It's a great way to see America, actually.
Now, where will you stay along the way? Will you camp? Will you be in 5-star hotels? This is grueling.
Realistically, the only place that you have that everyone sleeps is the RV. It's a constantly moving. You're constantly moving. There's no time, that you're pulling over and, where the whole team is, has stopped.
At one point. What are the challenges, for nighttime pedaling as opposed to daytime? I would imagine there would be some. You're going to be pedaling at night. Someone's going to be pedaling at night.
Yep. Yeah. Each team takes a fair amount of the nighttime riding as it gets split up. Nighttime is when the rider has to be followed within 50 feet from the van. So I suspect it's a little bit of getting used to having a van behind you that closely, working with the headlights that way. Obviously, as we all know up here too, wildlife and all kinds of things darting out. So, and it's just harder to read the terrain as well.
Well, you mentioned that a van is 50 feet behind the rider. Is there a general list of rules when you're setting up across country? Is there like an organization that says, if you're interested in making a ride across the country, here are the guidelines you have to follow? Is there a governing body?
If there was, it would be the Race Across America. They've gone from the first year, the route and the rule book being roughly 11 pages to what it is today, which is well over 120 pages. I think there's almost 40 pages of just rules. And typically the rules have come about through accidents, the occasional cheating. And so there's a bunch of rules, and it's all just meant to try to get everyone there safely.
You're nodding your head, Arlene. What are some of the rules? Do you know of any that are really unique or like following 50 feet behind the rider at nighttime?
Well, like Kirk said, they're basically all set up for the rider and the crew's safety. A lot of things are like the crew has to wear reflective vests and leg bands whenever they're outside of the vehicle. Also, at night, you have to make sure that your rider exchange is in the lights in front of the vehicle so you're safe. And you do have to come to a stop at night where during the day you do rolling starts. There's just a lot of different things.
That's interesting. So when one rider replaces another rider in the daytime, it's a rolling start as opposed to at night, you can dead stop?
Yes, because they want to make sure that you are going to be safe there in the headlights and that you can see what you're doing. The bikes at night have to have a headlight and a taillight, and then also the follow vehicle has a whole set of lights that they have.
Blinking lights or something like that.
And huge lights that basically light up the way for the bicycle rider as well.
Have you done it at night?
Yes, I actually like riding at night. Part of it is a lot of the way we're riding in heat and riding at night is a lot cooler. And you don't have to worry about getting sunburned. So that's nice.
Also, you can't see that big mountain ahead of you. You know, you have a certain amount of visual distance.
Right. You just have to focus on what's right in front of you and just keep on pedaling.
It's got to be somewhat surreal, isn't it? You know, in terms of being very close in on that.
This is Kirk here. I think probably one of the most difficult tasks possibly is actually the driver following that rider at nighttime. Everything from the slower times, trying to stay awake and stay motivated, keep the rider motivated, but also on some of the mountain passes, trying to keep up with a rider who's possibly going 50 plus miles an hour on curving terrain.
Okay. You get to Annapolis. How does everyone get back? Do you pedal back or what do you do? Oops.
This is Mel. We get to Annapolis and we've got an RV there with us that supported us. We have two vans that's supporting us. This year we will rent those vans here in Spokane and then drive them back because, as you can imagine, there's a lot of equipment, extra bikes, et cetera, that one takes on this. And the RV, we will actually drop off in Denver, Colorado, after we've picked it up in Los Angeles. That allows us to save $3,000 in a one-way drop fee.
Wow.
And then the rest of the crew will fly back.
Okay. Now, explain to me one more time. I'm a little bit sort of cloudy on this. The overall organization is Race Across America. And then you can have, then that has different causes. Is that the way it works?
Yes, this is Mel. Race Across America started 34 years ago.
Okay. There's
no prize money. So you might ask, why does one do this? Well, the majority of the individuals, they're solo riders, two-person, four-person, and eight-person teams. And literally everyone that competes in this race does it for some type of a cause. So ours happens to be 24 hours for Hank. Other causes may be for individuals, etc. Cumulatively, the teams and solo riders will raise at least $2 million
Wow.
in each individual race.
Okay. And so when you talk about, like, for example, the rules, is there a big eye in the sky that is watching you, or do they count on your goodwill?
Kirk here. No, there's actually officials that follow the riders across the nation. There's also regional officials. Some of them are in marked cars, some of them are not, and there are penalties that are accrued throughout the race. There's two different penalty boxes, I guess you would call them, that you actually wait out penalties if you have them accumulated throughout the race. And if you get enough penalties, you can be disqualified.
Wow. Now, will you run across any other Team Across America's groups, like somebody pedaling for muscular dystrophy, somebody pedaling for, or are you just sort of like adrift out there?
This is Dave. Yeah, we hopefully will pass a lot of them. as we go across.
Will some be coming east to west?
No. We're going to overtake these teams. Uh-huh. That's our plan. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so, you know, some of them will be identified with their cause. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we hope to see a lot of those folks not coming by us.
This is Mel. The way the race works is everybody starts from a team perspective on June 20th, and it's in a time trial start. And what that means is every minute there is a team taking off. When we start in Oceanside, okay. Let's say there's probably 60-plus teams that are going to take off 1 minute apart.
Okay.
And their support crews, and each of these support crews are probably 12 to 15 people, plus 3 to 4 vehicles per team. So it's mass chaos for about the first 100 miles.
Like a marathon beginning.
Yes, exactly. However, you know, as we go across the country, and as Dave and Kirk and Arlene are catching or passing or being in front of everyone, there is a race going on. For example, in 2013, when I rode, I will never forget, at about mile 2,000, going back and forth with a German team and we'd pass them, they'd pass us, we'd pass them, they'd pass us. So it truly is a race, and it is very, very competitive.
Okay, now I'm getting a picture of it, because I thought, you know, you're starting on June 20th, maybe another team will start on July 4th. No, this means everyone is starting with 1 minute separate. Mm-hmm. Do you know what minute you guys are starting on? I mean, when do you get that info?
Kirk here. So they start with 2-person teams, then go to 4-person teams, and then the 8-person teams are the final ones. I know we're team 4-2-3. We're the 23rd 4-person team. So depending on how many 2-person teams are up there, will be 24 minutes plus them, as far as after 12 o'clock.
Well, and same route?
Everybody's on the same route. And the route book is actually one of the more, gives tons of information, but it's also, you are required to follow that route directly. Another way that you can gain or that you can lose time and gain penalties is to be off route. Or not follow that route directly.
I see. And every foot of the way you're supposed to be on a particular road. It's not like get from Denver to
San Francisco. Yeah. Everyone's on the same route. Yeah. It's spelled out with every single right and left hand turn on there. They actually they'll have an official drive the route backwards about 2 weeks prior to the race, just to confirm that there's not things. And in every single race that I've done, at some point in time, whether it's weather or some kind of a construction project that they weren't aware of, you're rerouted. So at some point in time, you throw the route book away for a certain portion of the race and get those directions from headquarters and until you get back on the route.
How many teams are there total, roughly? Or teams and individuals, do you know?
I think Mel said it was probably 40 all told.
44-person teams?
Four-person teams, I think there's 28 or 29, I want to say.
Yeah, I think there's probably going to be a little over 60 teams in total. And then probably, I would guess, 75 or so solo riders.
Mm. Wow. So not everybody, if there's a solo rider, that person isn't going to do it in 7 days.
Last year's winner of the solo race did it in just less than 8 days, I believe.
Go away.
And that's why it's billed as the toughest endurance ride in the world. These solo riders that do this, these are people that train year-round.
World-class athletes.
They're world-class athletes. And basically, they will ride anywhere between 48 and 60 hours before they'll stop riding when the race starts. And they'll take probably 2 to 3 hours a day off. In our case, Kirk mentioned it before, but there's very little sleep when you go across the country. The riders will probably get somewhere in the neighborhood of about 3 hours of sleep, and the crew members will get about 2 to 3 hours of sleep.
Okay.
Because it's a constant motion.
So how did Team Laughing Dog decide doing this on 7 days as opposed to 10, as opposed to 6, as opposed to 3? Dave?
Well, Dave kind of came up with that, I guess. we looked at the team results from 2011 all the way through, and the 2011 team set the benchmark of 6 days and 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on that crew. Kirk was my navigator, and I was the driver. And I would have called that the perfect race. They had the best weather, the tailwinds. I mean, it was the ideal situation. So they kind of set the benchmark at 19 miles per hour and some change. So we certainly want to be able to come back and say, hey, we're in that 6 day, 7 day bracket. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of a personal goal.
Excellent. Now, Mel, you might not know the answer to this. What would be the longest that a team would, out of the 60 some odd teams, would there be some who will do it in 3 weeks or are?
So it will vary depending on how many people are on the teams. But for example, last year's winning 8-person team did it in 5 days and 5 hours.
Wow.
So you have 8 riders. These guys were, people were literally changing riders on the average every 1,000 yards, and it's a constant sprint. So when you're riding, the way to think about this is if you got on your bike, and for our 4-person team, and you pedaled as hard as you could for a half an hour, which you'd ride about 10 miles, that's what this 120-mile ride is that they're going to do each day. It's as hard as you can go. It's like a time trial.
Mm-hmm.
Last year's 8-person team that won it was 5 days, 5 hours. One of the teams was a little bit over 8 days. In fact, our team last year was a little bit over 8 days. We had some extremely hot weather. We had a group of people that it was really their first bike ride ever. So it was very encouraging to see that. In 2012, we had a 4-person women's team, and they did it in approximately 8 days. But on day two, one of our vans broke down 200 miles away from the nearest replacement van.
Ouch.
And we managed to get a replacement van, get a new van back on the road. The riders kept riding, and we lost about 2 hours of time in that particular effort. But that was because of Arlene and her teammates. Lastly, that year, they had about 75-mile-an-hour headwinds at times. There were gusts that fast in Kansas. So, well, Kansas may be flat. It's the toughest part of the ride.
And just to, this is Kirk again, just to reiterate, the race actually has a stopping point. You must do it in 9 days or less for teams, and individual riders are given 12 days to do it in.
Amazing, amazing. I'm quite sure that Team Laughing Dog wouldn't be able to do what they do without some major support and help. Are there any shout-outs that you want to give to organizations or individuals?
Yeah, definitely some of our major sponsors. Obviously, Laughing Dog Brewing, Trinity at City Beach, Easy Dog, and Greasy Fingers, and also Schweitzer Mountain Resort.
Cool. And one more time, Dave, given, again, the reason why we're doing this, and the four of you are putting feet to the pedals and going across country.
Well, I like to think about it as a race for a cure, and that's to give my grandson a quality life that I've enjoyed. And certainly we have the hope that that's coming near. And with the research dollars that continue to be generated, that's moving in the right direction. And as I mentioned earlier, the easiest way to find us, to support us, is through 24hoursforhank.org. Go to that website, and certainly that's the most direct line. But then we also have some other things that are going on where you can personally and physically get involved. And the first one's coming up tonight at the 219 Lounge. We're having a comedy show.
Okay.
And so those folks are going to be down there providing some humor for us, and people can come and participate in that. Starts at 8 o'clock. We would suggest you get there early. Space is limited. But anyway, that's one of the closest events. And then on May 7th, there's going to be a dinner provided by Jalapenas at their restaurant, and that'll go towards the cause. And then on June 13th, there will be our team send-off, which is going to be held out at Laughing Dog, and Fred is putting that together, and there'll be some great things to participate in there. And then, of course, the most current one coming up would be our golf tournament, April 24th, and that will be at the Avondale Golf Course. And so we are looking for teams. We're up to 22, so there's only a few left.
Where would one get in contact to, let's say, put together a team?
If you wanted to put together a team, again, you'd go to 24hoursforhank.org, and there's a registration place there. And it's $125 per person or $500 per team. We're also looking for hole sponsors. We've got about four of those left, and that's at $500. And then on July 2nd, we're going to come back and celebrate our victory in Annapolis. And at that time, we're having a dinner auction fundraiser at the Columbia Bank Center. And Ben Stein is going to be our guest speaker, and hopefully he'll give us some good entertainment on what he's learned from his bicycle as he rides around Sandpoint. So we're looking forward to those things as well. So.
Would you guys want to come back after you've completed all of this in July and gather on the microphones and share with us what the experience has been? Hopefully, yes.
Sure.
Arlene, would you come back?
Yeah, I would come back.
Okay, great. And I'm counting on all those items and events appearing in Sandpoint online, and we can mention them on the KRFY morning show in the weeks ahead. Anything final? One more time. Team Laughing Dog, the race across America to raise funds and awareness about cystinosis. The website is www.24, and that's numerals, Hours for Hank, and that's all squished together, .org. You can go on there, learn about the disease, learn about Hank, and contribute. Anything in closing that any one of you would like to say? This is Mel.
This is Mel. Yeah, this is a great cause. As we mentioned, we've got a comedy show going on tonight. 100% of the proceeds that are taken in will go to the cause and to support the team. These are national comedians, and if you want to be part of a world record, you really need to come down to the 219 tonight. Two national comedians are on a quest to do the most comedy shows in a year, and they are about to do that. Last year, one of them set a record for doing a comedy show in 50 states in 48 days. So wow. Have a lot of fun. Everything you spend will go 100% to the cause and to the team, and it'll be a great time.
Well, we hope to have you all back. This is 88.5 KRFY, Jack and Jim, and we've been with Dave Sturgis, Arlene Cook, Kirk Johnson, and Mel Dick. Thank you so much. You guys are, yesterday we had on Team Autism 24/7, and then 2 weeks ago, Gail, who has been, so many people are doing so much to improve the quality of life for everyone here in North Idaho, and thank you guys so much for doing that.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. We're going to move them slowly out of the studio, but what we're going to do is play the number one song 50 years ago on April 9th, 1965. I find it a little bit painful sometimes when the Beatles came over in their backwater, you know, as they came through, they brought a lot of other British bands, some who weren't as quality. This is Freddie and the Dreamers. I don't know how many folks out there remember Freddie and the Dreamers. He was 5'3" tall, and he would just sort of throw his arms and legs out on the stage when he would perform. I remember that. And this is their number one song on this date in 1965, I'm Telling You Now, here on 88.5 KRFY.
The KRFY Morning Show is broadcast every Tuesday and Thursday, live at 8 a.m. Tune in to 88.5 or stream us live from our website at 8 o'clock to hear the complete and unedited program, including musical selections. Due to our licensing, we are unable to include full songs in our downloadable podcasts. We now return to the KRFY Morning Show.
Freddie and the Dreamers, the number one song on April 9, 1965. I'm telling you now. Do you remember that, Jack?
I do not. I have heard that song before. You know, it's you can see it being a number one hit in the 60s, I guess. You mentioned that it doesn't maybe quite hold up to the standard that the Beatles had set with the British invasion, but there were... Freddie and the Dreamers weren't alone, I guess, in that.
No, you had Herman and the Hermits, Jerry and the Pacemakers, just a whole bunch of, at that time, wonderful, but it seems somewhat dated. And they didn't have any other mega hit, like I'm telling you now. They did have one called Do the Freddie, which we won't go into that one. Thank goodness that one didn't make number one. We'd be have to playing it in the... days ahead. Before we move on to our calendar events, do want to thank Nicole at Pedal Talk for Nicole. She put together Mel and Dave and Arlene and Kirk to come down here. The logistics of coordinating four different schedules is sometimes like herding cats. And so thank you, Nicole, for the great job that you did. Today at the Panada Theater, there was going to be an event at 4 and 8. That will be Scott Kirby doing Main Street Souvenirs. This will be at the Panada Theater. And today at the 4 p.m., the matinee Free for Kids. And tickets at the door. And the evening performance at 8. And this is a multimedia stage performance by once Sandpoint's own Scott Kirby. He was in the studio last week and showed me some of the paintings that he has taken slides of, as well as photographs. So this is a benefit for the Panhandle Animal Shelter, and the Panada is an in-kind sponsor providing a discounted rate for the facility rental. Main Street Souvenirs, Scott Kirby at 4 and 8 today.
You did have him in here last week, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes, Scott was here.
And do you hold the paintings up to the microphone?
That's one of the limitations of radio. Yeah. It's not a visual medium. Only the voice carries the message. But let me tell you, I wasn't aware that Scott was quite the artist.
Yeah.
And pictures, the photographs that he took will complement the music that he'll be playing. Absolutely. It looks like it's going to be an incredible. So if you don't go to the 219 comedy show at 8 o'clock, well, you can go to the 4 o'clock Scott Kirby and the evening performance of the comedians at 219 Club for Team Laughing Dog.
Sure.
Busy day ahead.
Coming up tomorrow, guess who's coming back to town? It's the Shook Twins, another group that
always
used to live
good
here
to see Caitlin and Laura.
Yes, they're coming back and performing tomorrow night at the Hive. This is also a benefit concert, this time for the Sandpoint Waldorf School. You know, What We Do is the album that came out last year, and to great reviews and good commercial performance as well, as far as I know. The eclectic, amusing, and whimsical duo is sure to take the audience away on an adventure that is their live show. Opening the show is Mama Doll. They're a still local band, and doors are opening at 7 p.m. Concert starts at 8 p.m. That's at the Hive on Friday night.
On First Avenue here in downtown Sandpoint. It's always good to welcome back the Shook Twins. They go off and do their wonderful things, and then they come back here to touch base back home. And we always welcome them with open arms. And you can hear not only the Shook Twins, but you can hear other music by other local artists. 8 to 10 on Tuesdays and 8 to 10 on Fridays on the KRFY Local Music Show. And that is hosted by who, Jack?
Well, that's hosted by me. That's hosted by my alter ego, Audio Jack. Thanks for the plug there, Jim.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you want to hear the Shook Twins and more, tune in. But tomorrow night at the Hive, the Shook Twins.
That's right. There's more local music going on this week, or tomorrow, actually. If you wanted to make it a full evening of local music, you'd go over to the winery just before the Shook Twins from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. and go see Bridges Home, a folk and Celtic duo featuring Tammy and Dave Gunter, and they are they're a great local band that performs originals and covers in a really fun style, and very beautiful. Coming up tomorrow night as well, there is a movie at the Sandpoint Events Center, 102 South Euclid Street. The film is called Damnation. The powerful documentary film is produced by Patagonia, and it's about America's growing movement to restore healthy rivers through the removal of dams, costly outdated dams on rivers. The evening includes a discussion following the film on Idaho's existing dams and the proposal to build more, led by Marie Kellner, who's ICL's water associate, and Greg Stahl, who's IRU's assistant policy director. Information on how the public can get involved will also be outlined. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and the film starts at 7:30 p.m. Ticket information is available from the Idaho Conservation League at 265-9565 or on their website. Do you know about this one, Jim? Do you know anything about this film?
No, I don't, but we do want to say the word damnation. It's a play on D-A-M, blocking the waterways, and it's all one word, I think, D-A-M-N-A-T-I-O-N.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not that we're being potty mouth at this early hour.
No. We're being environmentally conscious.
And also tomorrow night, if you choose not to go to Damnation, the Panada Theater is having a special showing of Paper Planes. They showed it last week, and it's going to be tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Panada. So many options here in town.
Which one is Paper Planes?
I don't know. It's about, I really can't tell you. I'm doing this off the top of my head. It's a... there was an open night this Friday night, and Patricia just decided to re-show it. She says it's really a good film, especially for the entire family. And last weekend, they had children making paper planes. So, again, a showing tomorrow night at the Panada.
Cool. I just looked that up real quick. It is held over by popular demand.
There we go.
An imaginative film about a young Australian boy's passion for flight and his challenge to compete in the World Paper Plane Competition Championships in Japan. Starring Sam Worthington of Wrath of the Titans and Terminator Salvation and Avatar.
Cool.
Yeah. That is cool. There's one more thing that didn't make our calendar, but I wanted to mention it because I mentioned it on the local music show the other night. Runaway Symphony is a local band, semi-local band. They're from North Idaho, and they are playing up in Bonner's Ferry on Saturday night, playing at the Pearl Theater.
Pearl Theater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Saturday night, doors open at, I think doors open at 6:30, actually. There's an opener at 7 p.m., and then the concert at 8 p.m., but I played a few of their songs. They're quite good, and I'm glad to have suddenly discovered them. That's Runaway Symphony.
Will we be hearing them on the regional show?
Yes, you will.
Excellent.
Yes, you will. I played some on Tuesday night, actually, and you will hear more from them in the future. I'll play some tomorrow night too, I think.
Great. Anything else on Friday? I mean, Friday. Whew.
Friday. It is coming right up. There's the Contra Dance, which goes on, I think that's an every other week, every other Friday thing, or at least...
At the Sandpoint Center?
Yeah, the Sandpoint... Sandpoint Community Hall South First Avenue.
Right at the bend, right at the bend.
Live music with Crooked Kilt is the band this time around. Crooked Kilt, with dances called by Emily Faulkner, while... community dancing in the New England tradition. All dances are taught and called, and beginners and singles are welcome. It's fun, aerobic, and friendly. New dancers are encouraged to arrive promptly at 7 p.m. Please bring a water bottle, comfortable shoes, and a smile. Someday I'm going to go to I'm going to go to one of those.
Oh, absolutely. No, Crooked mm-hmm. Kilt sounds like a brew, doesn't it? You mm-hmm. know, that comes out of like some small town in northwestern Montana.
Yes,
Crooked,
it does.
Crooked Kilt.
It very much does.
I'm moving to Saturday back at the Panada. Team Autism 247 is having a film called Ocean Heaven. That's at 7 p.m., not 7:30, 7 p.m., on April the 11th, and it's the story of a father's tireless love for his autistic son. So this is a fundraiser for Team Autism 247. It's about working with families and professionals to best serve the members of our community whose lives are touched by autism. So that's Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Panada, a film called Ocean Heaven.
Also coming up on Saturday, and on Friday for that matter, the Sandpoint High School has their musical, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, in the Sandpoint High School auditorium. Performances are at 7 p.m. on both Friday and Saturday night, with a matinee at 2 p.m. Ian Fleming wrote the James Bond books,
yep.
And he wrote one other book. It's the children's
Chitty,
book,
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Bang.
And I think he wrote some travelogues too.
That was a Disney movie, wasn't it, or something like that?
Yeah, with like Dick Van Dyke, I think.
Yeah.
Flying Car. It looks, I'm sure that the Sandpoint High School productions will put on a pretty good play there. So that's the 10th and 11th, Friday and Saturday night. Again, 7 p.m. and 7 p.m. both nights, 2 p.m. matinee on Saturday out at the Sandpoint High School auditorium. Also on Saturday night, a little more live music at the Idaho Poor Authority from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. with Chris Lynch. Catch some live local music at the Poor Authority. There's usually more than one concert going on at that time on the Cedar Street between 1st and 3rd or so. There's plenty of live music going on, but that's the one I'm choosing to mention.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got something a week from this Friday. There is the annual wine tasting dinner and auction for the festival at Sandpoint. That will be held at the Bonner County Fairgrounds Wine Garden, Friday, April 24th at 5:30 p.m. You can order tickets online at festival@sandpoint.com or call 208-265-4554. And you get your wine tasting dinner and a special wine glass. So that's a fundraiser for the festival at Sandpoint. And they're going to be coming up soon, I think in May, and announce the lineup. And then I think in the summer they're going to have the poster artists revealing of the poster. So we're heading towards the first two weekends in August. So this is the festival at Sandpoint's annual wine tasting dinner and auction on Friday, April 24th.
Nice to hear that they are doing the wine glass again. I know several people in town who have full sets of wine glasses that have the festival at Sandpoint logo
year by year.
Yes, so that's. This is your chance to get one of those. Jim, what can you tell me about Phil Oakes? Because I know almost nothing.
Well, Phil Oakes, the reason why we're mentioning him is that it was on this date in 1976 that he committed suicide. We won't play his songs now. I think let's move them to after Bird Note.
Sure.
I've queued up two songs and are winding down. But he was probably one of the most articulate singer-songwriters in the folk area during the 60s and into the 70s, but he was a very tormented personality, and he took it out on himself through alcohol and drugs. But he had a wide range of his ability. If you want a history of key people, key events in the 60s, politically, socially, listen to his music. Here's to the State of Mississippi is just an incredible song. Or Love Me, I'm a Liberal. These are just, and you can hear some of his music on the KRFY Folk Music Show, 9 to midnight on Thursdays. He's also known for some just beautiful songs, one called Changes, that Ian and Sylvia and Tom Rush do versions of, also There But for Fortune. And I think I have queued up, after the hour we'll play I Ain't Marching Anymore, and Joan Baez's cover up There But for Fortune. But just a really someone who did not survive the 60s in any good shape, and but boy did he contribute a number of wonderful songs. And that the name is O-C-H-S, Oakes, Phil Oakes. And but it was on this date in 1976 that he took his own life. So that's why I've queued him up.
Well, thank you for doing so. We are coming close to the end here. Do you have any more events?
I've got one more. The Marine Corps League of Sandpoint, I've been mentioning this for the last couple, but I think it's important, is asking for donations for their annual fundraising garage sale that's going to be held in May. And I'm quite sure at this time of year, we're going through our house and our garages or storage units and looking for items that we no longer need. And so they are accepting tax-deductible donations of goods and materials in good condition and or working order. All money raised goes to help veterans in Bonner County. And I think when we had Bill Collier on about, 4 weeks ago, maybe, or something like that, he said there are 19 different organizations helping veterans in Bonner County. You can call 265-5836 or 263-2215, and somebody will come to pick up the donated items or arrange to have them brought to their storage unit. So this is for the Marine Corps League of Sandpoint. All money raised goes to help veterans in Bonner County.
You know, there is that just noticed that Greasy Fingers is having their used bike sale this weekend. And we just talked about that. That's this Saturday, the 11th, on at Greasy Fingers, the corner of 3rd and Pine. We just talked to the Team Laughing Dog, who are going to be biking across America.
And one of their sponsors
is Greasy Fingers. It's about time to get those bicycles out, I think.
I got mine out. I got mine out. Yeah, yeah.
I rode mine down here and found out that the front brake is not functioning very well right now.
Ooh.
So I'm going to need some repairs, and probably need to pump up the tires, do some greasing.
I couldn't ride mine because the tires were so flat, so I walked over to Dairy Depot and without a gauge or whatever, just sort of felt, you know, that always makes me nervous.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, using the car inflator is very nervous.
And what's coming up next week, Jack? I don't have the reader board in front of me on KRFY Morning Show on Tuesday with Chris and Susie.
It is another edition of Garden Talk, just in time. Speaking of spring has sprung, Emily Levine and Pat Wentworth are joining host Susie Prez for another edition of Garden Talk on Tuesday at 8 a.m. Special guests with Joe Palisano and Tom Bry to share their gardening wisdom. Tune into this sure-to-be informative Garden Talk morning show. Whoa. And it is. It's the morning show on 88.5 KRFY at 8 o'clock a.m. That's with Susie and the whole gardening crew. You can email krfyradio@gmail.com if you have any specific gardening questions, which they can answer on the air for you. Or give us a call, leave a message before the show, 208-265-2992, and they will answer your gardening questions. That's it. Stay tuned for Bird Note and Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long. Phil Oakes coming up right after that.